We're starting the top of Ayin Hey Amud Aleph. Yesterday we left off with the Gemara's question of Bamamam and Agvan. How do you cleanse out, how do you clear out the press? So we had a machlokus between Rav and Rabbi Barachana. Rav said water, Rabbi Barachana said Efer. The Gemara's conclusion was, below Plige, they don't argue. Just that Rav says water and then Efer. And Rabbi Barachana says Efer and then water. But the difference between them has to do with it depends if they were dealing with a moist press or if they were dealing with a dry press. In a moist press, you would start with Efer and then complete it with Maim, like Rabbi Barachana. And in a dry press, you would do like Rab, which is you start with Maim and then you'd work with Efer. So now the Gemara is going to present the opinions in Rab and Shmuel Machlokas about this Niguv. It's extremely ambiguous, cryptic. And therefore, there are actually three different ways to learn this Gemara. Rashi brings two of them, and Tosafot brings a third way to learn the Gemara. So it says, Yitmar be Rav, Mishmei de Rav. Ad Amrei, Tarte Tlat. So Rav says, right, two and three. Shmo Amar, Tlat Dalet, three and four. Besurma, no, Hachi, that's what they learned when they were in the city of Sura. But Pumpadita, Matube, Rav, Amre, Mishmei, the Rav. Pumpadita, they added the other, another version of this, which is that Rav says, Tlat, Dalad, 3 and 4. Shmuel Amar, Dalad, Hey. Shmuel says, 4 and 5. Velo Plige, they don't argue. Marka Choshev, Maya, Batrai. Mar, Loka Choshev, Maya, Batrai. One of them counts the last water, or the last rinse, and one of them does not count the last rinse. All right, so what they're talking about here, the one thing that is common between all the shitot is that the numbers here represent a sequence of Efer and Mayim, of ashes and water, and the sequence is always alternating. So if you start with Efer, then it'll be Mayim, Efer, or if the other way around, if you start with Mayim, it'll be Mayim, Efer, Mayim. So either way, you're alternating either between Efer and Mayim. The question is, which do you start with? Now Rashi brings down two lishonot. What's extremely interesting about Rashi is, you should look at the last narrow line in Rashi, something I'm not familiar with, but I think it was the only time I remember in Shas that he says this. He quotes a lashon, says, Lashon Abba Mori Menuchato Kavod. He quotes the lashon from his father. The second lashon that he brings down is from his father, and he says, the Rashon, Lashon Mori. And the first one is from my Rebbe. So Rashi brings down two lishonot, one from his Rebbe, and one from his father. And in the end, he does favor his father's opinion, and he asks questions on his Rebbe's position, and he thinks that his father's position is correct. Now, what are these two positions? What's going on here? So the Rashi, I laid it out in a chart for you. Rashi over here says that when it comes to the first lashon, this is Lashon Mori, which is the first lashon that he brings down, Surah, Rav believes that you need only one Efer, and Shmuel believes you need Efer twice. So therefore, you have Efer and Mayim in the first Lashon. You have Efer and Mayim, and then according to the Yeveshta side, you have Mayim, Efer, and Mayim. So that'll be the two is Efer and Mayim, and the three is Mayim, Efer, Mayim. And then Shmuel requires two Efers in order to cleanse it out. He has Efer, Mayim, Efer, which is three, and then he'll have Mayim, Efer, which will be the four, according to the Lashon of Surah. Then when you go to Pumpadita in this Lashon, it's Efer, according to Rav, he also now requires two Efers, which is Efer, Mayim, Efer, and he requires for Yevishta, he requires Mayim, Efer, Mayim, Efer. So he's basically the equivalent of Shmuel. Right. In Surah, Rav is when it comes to Lashon Pumpadita. And then Shmuel extends that and says, Efer Mayim, Efer Mayim, and Mayim, Efer Mayim, Efer Mayim. So that'll give you the four and the five. Now the Lo Plige in this Lashon refers to, the Lo Plige is only according to Lashon of Pumpadita. Only in Lashon Pumpadita it says the Lo Plige. Why is that? Because it says Lo Plige, Mar Kachoshiv Mat Betrai, Mar Loka Choshiv Mayim Betrai. What does that mean? That means that Rav, who says Efer, Mayim, and Efer, doesn't tell you about the rinse at the end. After you do Efer, you can't leave the Efer in the press. So there's a rinse in the end that he's leaving out. On the other hand, Shmuel puts that mayim in. And same thing with the Yevishta, where it's mayim Efer, mayim Efer, the mayim Batra, the last mayim he doesn't include, which Shmuel does. So therefore you have Velo Plige. So here, you have a picture of it here. According to this Lashon, according to this first Lashon, this is what Rashi does not like about this Lashon. It says Velo Plige. The Lo Plige means, Lo Plige Rabin Shmuel, Lahai Mishnah de Pumpadita. That's it. But that means in Lashon Surah, we don't address it at all. And the Lo Plige is because of Rab and Shmuel. In the opinion of Pumpadita, Rab doesn't mention the Mayim, while Shmuel does mention the Mayim. That's the difference in the first Lashon. In the second Lashon, Rashi comes to, from, this is the Lashon for his father. In the second Lashon, Rashi comes to deal with that problem. The basic premise of the second Lashon is that when they have a Lo Plige, is not that Rab and Shmuel don't argue, but rather Pumpadita and Surah don't argue. Rav and Shmuel do argue. They argue in both Lashonot. But Pumpadita and Surah can be reconciled between them. And how do you reconcile between them? That's the Maya Batrai, the last water. Now the key element of Rashi Shita, which is what Tosos doesn't like here, and his father's Shita, is that he actually swaps Rav's opinion and Shmuel's opinion. That means that when Rav speaks at first, he's talking about the Yevishta, and his second means that the Tarte, the two, is in the dry press, and the Tlato is in the moist press. But when it comes to Shmuel, it's the opposite way around. The three that he's speaking about are in the wet press, and the four that he's speaking about are in the dry press. So what he does, he's saying that Shmuel and Rav are not consistent in the way they're expressing themselves. Rav is saying, this is the din for dry and then moist, and then Shmuel's the other way around. Here's the din for moist, and here afterwards the din for Yevishta. By doing that, Rashi allows you to reconcile between Surah and Pumpadita now. Because then there'll be the key element between Rav and Shmuel in Surah and Pumpadita will simply be the Maya Batrai, which is over here. You can see then in the first case, for instance, Rashi, where he says Mayim and Efer is two. Later on, by Pumpadita, they just say Mayim Efer Mayim. So that'll give you the Mayim Batrai is the difference between them. And in the Retiva for Rav, it'll be Efer Mayim Efer, missing the last rinse, which will be in the Lashon of Pumpadita. And with Shmuel, it'll be Efer Mayim Efer Mayim. And then in Lashon Pumpadita, it'll be right Efer Mayim, including that Mayim, that last rinse. And then the Yevishta for Shmuel will be Mayim Efer Mayim, but the Mayim won't be mentioned in the Surah one, but it will be mentioned in the Pumpadita. So in that instance, you have a Machlokas between Rav and Shmuel throughout, that we never reconcile. Rav and Shmuel argue. It's just that Surah and Pumpadita, there we shall note, if you take the Maya Batrai, that's the difference between them. That means that Surah and Pumpadita are saying the same thing in Rav and Shmuel. The Re's opposition to this is the fact that in each case, you're flipping Rav and Shmuel are speaking in a different order. So that makes it very difficult. So the Re's solution is to say, yes, they are in a different order, but only the difference between them is in the case of Surah, they're talking about the Yevishta first, so the dry one first. And in Pumpadita, they're talking about the Retiva first, the moist one first. The way that what the Reed does by doing this is creates it that it actually turns out in both Surah and Pumpadita, Lo Plige Rav and Shmuel. Surah and Pumpadita do argue, but Rav and Shmuel don't argue. The reconciliation between Rav and Shmuel in both cases is the Maya Batrai, is the last border that comes up. And by doing that, he says, as opposed to Rashi's first Lashon, where he brought down he had a problem with it, which is that I only solved the problem in Pumpadita that Rav and Shmuel don't argue. According to the Re, Rav and Shmuel don't argue both in Surah and in Pumpadita, and that has to do with Maya Batrai. I sent it out. You can see all the Lashonot laid out here. All right, now the Gemara continues. Baminei Rabbi Abau, Hane Gurgai. So this, the Gemara that we just finished is the Nikuv. Now the Gemara says, okay, we're into kashering. How do we take care of kashering all different types of items? And the Gemara is going to go through all different utensils and so on and so forth and ask, how do you deal with these types of issues? So the Gemara says, Bo minei mi rabbi abo, hani gurgai, these wicker nets that are my, that are used by non-Jews, my, what's their din? So amelei rabbi bo, tenitua. We have a braita that addresses this. Because it says, Haresh Ayu Gitav Ubeipadav Tmeim, if his gat, his press, and his big bad, his olive press, his wine press, his olive press were Tamei, Ubekesh La Sotam Betara, and he wants to retire them. How does he do this? Hadapim, and the dapim are these framing planks, but they are the ones that are used on top of the pile or mound of whether it's grapes or olives to press. I mean, there's the Korah, the heavy beam, or like the corkscrew that comes down on top of these beams and presses on them. But they are the actual level that sits on top of the grapes, and then either you press on them with the korah, put something heavy on top of these planks, or you put pressure on them through a corkscrew, and they press down. Hadashim is the trough, or the actual gat itself in the press, the base of the press. Alulavim are these broom made out of twig brooms that they use to sweep all the grapes that escape from the tapuach, escape from the pile. Then madichan. In order to cleanse those out, all you have to do is rinse them off. That's fine. Hakalim, on the other hand, when it comes to hakalim, shel nitzarim, v'shel bitzbutz, when it comes to these bale twigs that are made out of nitzarim is willow, or bitzbutz is hemp, or the possibility here, the Masoret HaShas says pishtan, which would be loshon butz, would also be flax or linen. Minagvan, then you have to do niguf, which we just described before, what you have to do for niguf. The shell shifa, the shell demi, if it's made out of bast or reeds, then miyashnan yud bet chodesh. He has to leave them around for 12 months. So when it comes to these akalim, right, these are some sort of sticks or, that are used here, that they require much more extensive cleaning, and it depends what material they're made out of. If they're made out of nitzarim or bitz boots, then they need niguf. On the other hand, if they're made out of shifa and gemi, they need to be left for 12 months unused in order to kasher them. So Rabbi Shimon Omer, minichan migad legat, mibad lepad. You leave them from year to year, from one, you know, season of pressing to another season of pressing, from the bad to bad is the olive press to the olive press. So when it says, haino taina kamo, I mean, you only press, you do wine pressing once a year, you do olive pressing once a year. So why is it him saying that you leave it from gat to gat? It's equivalent to saying you leave it for 12 months. When it says, the difference between them is if you have an early crop or a late crop. I mean, in a year that you have a late crop, it'll be less than 12 months until you come the next year when you have the normal time. The other way around, if you had an early crop, then the following year it'll be further away, more than 12 months.
Easier than that.
Well, Shanu should not, I mean, technically, Chazal feel that it does affect the harvests and things that the Chazal say does affect it, but technically the leap year should not affect it. If you say 12 months, 12 months is 12 months without, include the leap year, so it's not 13 months. And according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, your harvest should be equal if it was every year was done at the same time. I mean, it's a solar-driven thing, not a lunar-driven thing. Then you should have exactly a 12-month period in between them, or 12 solar months in between them. Rabbi Yossi Omer, I would say, L'taran miyad. What happens if you want to be mitar them right away? So then, magil'an berotchin, that either you put them into a boiling cauldron, boiling water, or chutan b'mezeitim. You scald them with the water of zeitim. The water of zeitim is the water that was boiled up in order to soften the olives, that they were put in there to soften them before you press them. So that's a hot, very hot water. You place them in order to kasher them. Shimon Gamliel, Mishum Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Minichan Tachat Sinor, Shememav Mikalchin, Moyan Shememav Rodfin. The way you can kasher them is put them under a continuous flow of water. That's either because from water that is coming out of a pipe that's dripping all the time, or from a spring that has a continuous flow. So that continuous flow on them causes to kasher them. Kama, how long? Ona, one period. But kederach shamru b'yayin nesek, kachamru b'tarot. Just like they say b'yayin nesek, that's what they say by tarot. Where it says, kalfi layo, should be just the opposite. B'tarot kaiminon, we're talking about the whole bright that we brought here, all this memro is about tarot. So the other way, ela kederach shamru b'tarot, kachamru b'yayin nesek. So now we're going to ask, kama ona. How much is an ona? So you say, how much? Ona. Ona is a season, a period. What does that mean? Ona. So Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Rabbi Yochanan, O Yom, O Laila. Or it's either a day or a night. So it says, Nafkaminot, we have this by Nida, Bilchod Nida, that when it comes to a veset, one has to be mafrish from the wife, from Ishto, Ona Achat, Lifnei Kain. That's what we are in general, mafrish ona achad lifnei kein. What does it mean in ona achad lifnei kein? It's 12 hours. Ona is a yom or laila. And then there's the chumra of the or zeruah, who says that an ona, that we add on an additional ona, which is 24 hours. So it's day and night, according to the or zeruah. But that period of ona is significant, because we saw it in Shavuos. When we talked about nida in the beginning of Shavuos, we saw that. We're going to see it again when we get to the nida, about the idea of being mafrishim lifnei veset ona. Rabbi Chana Sheina, this is his name. Rami La Rabbi Chana Bar Sheina. Amma Baba Bar Chana, Am Rabbi Yochanan, Chatzi Yom, Chatzi Laila. And Ona is half a day and half a night. So Amma Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yitzhak, Velo Plige. They don't argue. Ha Betkufat Nisan Vetishrei. when Rabbi Chiya bar Ava Amar Rabbi Yochanan gave his tem, it was at the equinox. The equinox, which there, the days are, and nights are exactly equal. So he says it's either Yom or Laila, because each one of those will be 12 hours. On the other hand, the statement of Rav Chana Sheina, Rav Chana Bar Sheina, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, when he says Chatzi Yom and Chatzi Laila, that's referring to the Tkufat Tammuz Devet, the summer solstice and the winter solstice. Because if you take half the day and half the night at the solstice, it will equal 12 hours. So, because at the solstice, the day is either very long or very short. But if you take half the day plus half the night, that will equal 12 hours. That would be the equivalent of a yom or a laila at the time of the equinox. So, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Hanei Rivakai De'armai. So these straining bags, non-Jewish straining bags, Demazio, they're made out of hair, Medichan. Then you just have to rinse them off. Rashi says about mazia, about hair, that it's low balei tuva, it doesn't absorb so much. Right? Which is interesting, just the Gabe Shabbos, we say that there's no din of schita when it comes to seyar. So the question of low balei tuva or low balei legamre is an interesting question by hair, but you see here that the requirement in order to kasha them is simply medichan because of that. If they're not boleya, there's no schita, and if they're not boleya, there's no need for plita. So you know, then simply medichan is enough. The amra, if they're made out of imra, if they're made out of wool, minagvan, then you have to do niguf. Dikidna, if it's made out of flax, miyashnan, then you have to leave them for the 12-month period. So you see that depending on how absorbent the material is, you have to do a more significant kashering of the item that is here. Vika kashre, if there are any knots in this net, in the straining bags, then sharlu, you have to undo the knots. That the knots can't remain when you go to kasher them because they... Kashering won't reach into the area of the knots. You want anything that's trapped in there, so you have to undo the knots in order to do that. Alright, so ane dekule v'chalata. So dekule are these wicker baskets. V'chalata is a loose wicker work that they used probably for some sort of sifting. That they used there some sort of mesanein as a strainer to pour through. If they if they were put together with balsam strings, then medichan. All you have to do is rinse them off. On the other hand, if they are the tzavto, if they're made out of reeds, nagvan, then you have to do niguv. The kitna, if they're made out of flax, then miyashnan, then you have to leave them for the 12-month period. Veitvu kitre, again, if they have knots in them, sharilu, then you have to undo the knots. So now the interesting thing here is Tosos talks about kitna, flax. It sounds like from this Gemara over here that flax or linen is very absorbent, and that would be problematic. In order to undo the blia instead of the kitna, you have to wait, miyashnan, you have to wait 12 months. So here Tosos says, on the top right, he says, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, t'mapot esadinim shelanu. What about our tablecloths and our sheets? Shesharu b'yayin esech, that they were dipped or they were soaked in yayin esech. Ain't tzarich liyashnan. From our Gemara would sound, in order to remove it, you would have to be miyashnan, leave them for 12 months in order to get this bliya out. Midikamar, delamakamar kol klei pishtan, stam, elohani kelim shemanu chachamim. Does it say any linen or flax utensil requires this? But these particular utensils that Chazal mentioned over here, sheyubikim dafka bliyatan, because they were well versed or they understood well the absorbency of these kelim, and therefore they required extra to get it out. And we don't differentiate between cold yayin esek and other isurim when they're hot. We've seen this many times that we're machmir by yayin esek with tzonein, like we would be roteach and other isurim. All you have to do is put a klei sheni on it and clear it up. How do they launder in their day? They pour over the klei sheni, then they bang away at it for a while. It's clear that it's left in mapa. So maybe something tight, holds in tight versus not. But Tosa says it's clear we see that if you take the klei pishtan, our tablecloths and our sheets, that have wayan esek absorbed, and then if you simply do launder them, it all comes out. There's nothing left in there. So that's clear, so therefore it's kosher. What about our Gemara that says here that klei pishtan need 12 months in order to get rid of it? So this is unique to these utensils, because either of the way they were used or the function that they served, they absorbed much more, either because they sat for many, if they were straining or for whatever reason, there was a lot of sitting on them for a very long period of time, or there was some fermentation that happened on them that allowed or had them stick tight to the kli, therefore it required 12 months to eliminate it. Itmar amaretz shushit yadolagat. Amaretz sticks his hand into the press, but he touched not the wine itself, but he touched a cluster of grapes that's found inside the press. The cluster itself, plus anything that's adjacent to the cluster, is tmeim. The rest of the gat, everything else is Torah. The whole gat is tmeah. The lamanda mar eshkol v'chol sviyutav tmeim v'chol agat kula Torah. My shnami hod, it's not. How's this different than the Mishnah? Sheretz shenimtza v'rechayim. You find the sheretz inside of the mill. Enu mitamei ela makom magol. He's only mitamei the place where he touches. V'maya mashkim mehalich. If there is a liquid that's flowing through there, akol tamei. Everything comes tamei. So that's exactly what we have here. You have a press that has some solids in it, but there's liquid flowing. You have wine that's all over the place. So why doesn't the wine convey the tumah from the eshkol, from the cluster, out to what's around it? Versus the case of the tumah, where the sheretz touches in the rechaim any liquid, that it conveys the tumah to everywhere throughout the whole mill. Mar says, hatam lo mifsak velo mide. By the mill, the water flows freely. There's nothing to stop the water from flowing around inside of the mill, because there's no solid object in there to stop it, so all the liquids are connected. Here you have multiple clusters of grapes that actually break between the different piles of liquid. As you press them, there are clusters here, liquids here, and the liquids can be trapped between the different clusters. So there is not a continuum of liquid from any point in the gut. So when he touches the eshkolet, he affects it and the liquid that's directly around it. But other liquid throughout the gut is not necessarily connected to that liquid, and therefore it's not tmeah. So Orile Rabbanan the Rabbi Yirmiyah, V'amila Lebrei, the Rabbanan gave, or Paskan Alokha gave him instruction, or to his son, to Rabbi Yirmiyah, Kedivrei Omer Eshkol V'chos V'yotav Tmeim V'chol Agat Kulo Tu'ara. That was the psak that they gave, in this case, the Rabbi Yirmiyah, that it's only the Eshkolot and the liquid around, directly around it, that are tmei, but the rest of the gut is fine. The next Mishnah continues through the end of Masechta, and this is the fundamentals of kashering kelim. Fundamentals of kashering kelim come all from here. These two dapim and avodah zarah basically laid it out for us, the way that you can kasher kelim. And number two is that you have to take to the mikvah any new keli. Those two halachot come out of this mishnah and the gemara that's subsequent to this. So these are the fundamentals. We'll do a little bit of today. Tomorrow maybe we'll spend a little more time in Iyun and look into the sugyas that are interesting of kashering a little more. Okay, achli tashmish mina ovdei kuchabim. So he bought a kli from a non-Jew. Some of it is used bitzonein in the cold and simply has water poured on it. Then yetzbil, all you have to do is take it to the mikvah and be tovelet. Lagio, something that's used in hot water that is inside of boiling water, has water boiled inside of it. Then yagil, the same way that it is bolea, you have to be polate, which is you have to boil it in a cauldron, or depending on machlokas, whether you can pour hot water over it. Lilabain ba'or, it's used normally under fire. Then yilabain ba'or, then you have to put it into the fire. Hashipur, what are examples of that? Hashipur v'asachlo. Hashipur is a spit or a skewer. Asachlo is a grill. So then, melabdan bor, to cleanse them, to kasher them, you have to put them into the fire. They're used directly in the fire. Therefore, they're kasher. They give a grill on your barbecue. That's used under the direct flame. To kasher it, you got to put it under a direct flame. Hasakin shafa vihi tohra. Hasakin, all you have to do is scrub it down, and it is tohra, then it's fine. So the case of the sakin, we're talking about a case where it's used extensively by the goy with shamninut, which is with fats. As the Tosu says, that the fats stick to the knife. It's not simply that he used it when in cold or in something in fitzonein, because then you could just simply wash it off and it'd be fine. Here it has to be used under dochak, under pressure, and used with shamninut, so there's a residual fats that gets on the knife, and therefore you need to scrub it down in order to kasher it. Tana, v'kulan tzvichin tvila b'arbein tza'a. Every keli that you get, the new keli from a goy, has got to be put in the mikvah. Where do you know that from? What do you mean? Where do you know the fact that every new keli has to put in the mikvah? So Amar Rav, Amar Krav, Pesuk says, Kol davar sheyavo ba'esh, taviru ba'esh. Anything that goes into fire, you should put into fire. V'taher. Sif lecha katuv, tara acheret. What is v'taher at the end? Obviously, you have put in the esh. Once you put in the esh, you kashered it. What's v'taher? So it's an additional tara that has to be added on in the end. What's that tara? That's putting it in the mikveh. Tani bar kapar mitoch shenemar b'meini da shomei ani shetzarich hazar shlishius shvi. I would say, well, if it says meini da, that in order to kasher the kelim over here, they have to go b'meini da. So meini da indicates that they need to get hazar shlishi v'shvi and put in the mikveh, because anything that's tamei meit requires azad shlishi and shvi, third day and seventh day from the parah adumah, and a mikveh in the end. So I would think the same thing by kelim. In order to kash them, you would need azad shlishi and shvi plus mikveh. Tamalomer ach chilei. It says ach for all those things that are tamei meit. You need that. But for simply being tovel kelim that you bought from the nachri, then you just put it in the mikveh, and you don't need to have azad shlishi and shvi. Imke matamalomer b'mei nida. So the fact that it says v'taer by mei nida, what's the requirement nida? Mayim shnida tovel b'hem. That's be water that a midah would go into. Avi Omer, Arbaim Sa'ah. That's 40, full 40 Sa'ah. Itzrech the Mikhtav of Taher, Itzrech the Mikhtav of Meinidah. I need both of these instructions. One of Taher and one of Meinidah. Ikhtav of Taher, Havamina of Taher, Koldu. I would think Taher means any way possible. Koldu, whatever Tahara. Mean that you could put in a simple, like a machat. A needle doesn't require Arbaim Mina Torah, does not require Arbaim Sa'ah. And a needle can simply go in any ashbon of water that covers the whole needle. So same thing over here. That the tovel mimikveh doesn't require arbim sa, just enough to cover the whole keli. So that's why it comes along and says, katav rachmana b'mei nidah. Mei nidah tells you 40 sa. B'katav rachmana b'mei nidah b'mina erev shemesh. Ah, mei nidah, that's like nidah. Nidah goes to the mikveh, and then she has to wait to erev shemesh. She needs the sun to set in order to be tahor. So maybe if I thought mei nidah, you'd have to take the keli, put it in the mikveh, and you put the keli in the mikveh, and then you'd have to wait till the sun sets in order for it to be kasher. So no, tomorrow's come on, v'taher la'alter. Immediately it's tahor. So therefore you require a full-fledged mikveh, but it's tahor immediately after you put it into the mikveh. And this is tvilat kelim that we know of. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bravo, afilu kelim chadashim b'mashma. That over here, it's even new kelim, even new utensils. I mean that the sugi of Midyan is utensils they took from the Midyanim that were already used. So you would think maybe after you kasha the keli, then you would have to put it in the mikveh. But if you brought a brand new keli, even from an achri, you wouldn't have to put it in the mikveh. So that's along comes from Nachman Ravua, afilu kelim chadashim mashma. Da, yishenim v'libnan, ki chadashim damayu. I'll tell you why. Because when you kasha a kli, it's like as if new. If you put the kli in a fire, you fire up the kli, it's equivalent to bringing a brand new kli over here. And yet I see, v'afilu ochi by tvila. So even though I kashed it through libun, and libun creates a new kli over here, a status of a new kli, nevertheless, I still have to take it to the mikveh. So if I had to take it to the mikveh after I did libun, then I have to take it to the mikveh after I got a brand new keli. What about the scissors of the weaver? Why don't they have to go to the mikveh? You buy a pair of scissors, you should have to take them to the mikveh. So I'm like, kli suda amurim b'parsha. We're only talking about utensils that are used for eating. Those are the only ones that are required. Ah, where do I know that from? How do I know that it's only talking about klei suda? So Rashi says, because the Parsha says, the ktiv kol davar asher yavo be'esh, everything that comes into the fire. Ve'ein derech lishtemesh yedei or, elo kelim shel tzorchei suda. You only use things in the fire, those are kelim for a suda. But hanu ktiv v'taher, that you need a tefillah. Normal kelim, you don't use them in the fire. Most utensils are not used in fire. Utensils that are used in fire are generally for food purposes. So the fact that the libun is demanded over here, and these are kelim that go in fire, that's an indication that we're talking about klei suda. So klei suda require, or to be put in the mikveh before they are used, but that's not true of all kelim that are bought from a goy. It's a good question. I was thinking the same thing. The only thought I could come up with is the difference between something that sits in the fire, that's used in the fire, left in the fire, versus something that is put in temporarily and then taken out. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rabba Barvo lo shanu ela b'lukuchim. If you purchase them, ukumas eshaya, like the case in Midyan. Midyan, you took possession of the kelim from Midyan. Aval she'ulim lo. If you're borrowed kelim, you do not have that requirement. You don't have to put them in tefillah. So Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, zavon mano de mardo, miobid chokovim. He bought a utensil of marda. This guy's a marda, or the other gears of the shiltot, is the pachara. It's something that we've seen before. It was a mixture of earth and dung. It's made of tzviyei bakar, dung and earth that were put together. They made some sort of keli. So he brought that from Chavim Savadat Bila. He wanted to put in the mikveh. Malay Omer Rabbanan, Rabbi Yaakov Shmeid, the Didim of Parsha Mine, the Rabbi Yochanan, Kli Matechot Amrim Baparsha. What's spoken about in the Parsha of Midyan? We're talking about metallic kelim. So metallic kelim require tefila b'mikveh, but not kelim that are made out of these tzvi bakar, made out of like kli cheres, made out of the earth.
They didn't want that mikveh.
To eat from it was okay, but to put in the mikveh. Sam Ravashi, hane klei zuchuchit. What about glass? Hoil bechinish dabru yeshlem takana kelim matechot. Since they glass, when it breaks, you can heat it up, you can refire it, and you can recreate it. Just like clay metechot, if they break, you can heat them up and reform them.
So certainly,
right, they're just like clay metechot because of that, and therefore you'd have to take them to the mikveh. Kunya, this is an issue that we brought up before. Kunya is a kli cheres that is glazed. Glazed with a lead glaze. So, pligi bar ravacha ravina. Chanamar ketchilato. One says ketchilato mean that it's a din of kli cheres. V'chadamar kisufo, that it's like its end, which means the glaze, which would be metallic. V'hilchata, and the loch is kisufo, that we look at it as a metallic side. Again, the nafkamina, we spoke about this last time we bumped into kunya, is that the nafkamina, it goes one's atzad the chumra, one's atzad the kula. That here, if you claim that it's a kli cheres, and therefore you don't have to take it the mikveh, then you also have a problem in terms of kashrut. If charfu touches it, then it's also a kli cheres, and a kli cheres cannot be kashrut. In this way, if it was done by chamin, if it's betzonin, there is a way to kashrut, but if it's done by chamin, you can't kashrut. So the kula is naseh chumra when it comes to kashrut. And the other way around, if you do take it to the mikveh up front, and you say that it's a kli matechet, then a kli matechet could be kashrut. So therefore, if it was boleya isr afterwards, there would be a way to kashrut, assuming that we don't say that it goes through the matechet into the cheres. But that way, it's the kula that's here by mikveh will actually be a chumra when it comes to kashring the keli later on. Tosos mentions over here, it's very interesting. He says, by Chilkotakisofo, he says, Hanu kelim, shemechupim be'ever mibiftim. We're talking about a lead coating inside, glaze that's on the inside. But mechupim bechutz, if it's on the outside, it's not, it's clear that it's a kli cheres. And he says, v'chein kli eitz, he says, the wooden utensils, amchushakim saviv barzel, that use metal bands around them to hold the wood kli together, like the barrels, that we've seen this before in the Tosos, that have metal bands around them to hold the barrels together. So there, that those that are held together by metal, I feel that everything goes after what holds the kli together. You don't use them through the matechet. And the kli suda amurim, but parsha I know shem shamfim them. So a kli suda that you use. So the location of usage is what determines the status of the kli, not the fact that it's being held up by metal, not the fact that it's coated on the outside. It's the internal a part of the kli that will determine what the status of the kli is. So now the other thing that Tosfos mentions here, which is actually important in halacha, is of a shulim lo, says if you borrow it's not, Omer Rabbeinu Shmuel, Rashbam says, Yisrael sheshal kli miYisrael chaviro, borrows a kli from his other friend. Shekana miyobei kachavim, that he bought from a non-Jew, tzarech tvila. Kevi shabai yidei chiyub tvila, biyad Yisrael Rishon. Since Yisrael Rishon bought it, and he should have done a tvila with it, therefore when you borrow it from him, you are required to do a tefila, because the tefila of chiyuv was never done. So on the other hand, if you simply borrow the kli from a Jew who already did tefila, it's not considered like you bought the kli and you don't have to do a tefila. Same if you borrow it from an achri, since it's not your kli, then you don't have to put it into the mikveh. It's not a new kli that you have to put into the mikveh. This might have application. There is a kula that's brought up. I'll try to find it, maybe bring it with me. It'll be more Ian tomorrow. It's a question with regards to hotels. In hotels where they had kelim, that they were not tovel in the mikveh. You go to a hotel and they weren't tovel the new kelim in the mikveh. Can you eat at the hotel? So there are those that are matir for exactly this reason, that the kelim in the hotel are not yours, they are she'ulim. They are borrowed kelim. You're using them from the hotel. You're borrowing them from the hotel to use while you're there. That's what you're doing. You're basically renting or borrowing the kelim at that point in time. From Tosfos, it would sound that that's not the case because there was a chiyuv by Yidei Yisrael to put him into tevila. So that fact that you're shoel them is not the case. So others would not make that requirement that as long as you are a borrower, not the owner, that you don't have the obligation. Obligation is a chiyuv gabra, not a chiyuv keli. Which would make a big difference there by these places. If you go to somewhere where they didn't, they weren't tovel kelim. Baal tshuva that goes back to his parents, that's also, they were never tovel the kelim. So can he eat on the kelim that are there, betzonin, and so on and so forth, might have to do with this issue. If you're borrowing, if it's not your kelim, that's not a problem, necessarily. Ibai lehu. Mashkanta mai. If someone leaves you a collateral, what's the din in terms of tevila? Does it require tevila or not? Amar mar bavashi, abo mashkan le yovid chavim kasa de kaspo. My father, a non-Jew, left as collateral with him a silver goblet. But vlei vishtebe, he put it in the mikveh and he drank from it. Vlei yadan, I don't know why he did it, put it in the mikveh. Imi shum te kosar mashkanta kizvini dami. Does he think that a collateral has a din of transaction, as if you own it now, that the person, the creditor, when he's holding the mashkon, is kuneh the mashkon, which we have from Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak says, l'chatiyat staka, when you return it. How could you have staka? You must have had a kinyan on it. So you have a kinyan on it. How great that kinyan is a question. I mean, are you just kuneh the own sin? Are you kuneh it in the gamre, that you become the bow in some sense over that kli? So the question here, did he put in the mikveh because he thought he owned the kli in some sense, and that's why he mashkon? Or he got wind of the fact, or he realized that this guy had no intention of paying him back, and this goblet was going to be him with him for the long term. So the fact that he thought, so he put in the mikveh because he knew he was going to use it. All right, so Tosfos, just so you quickly, Tosfos, all these, because of practical halacha, they went through these things. Tosfos says, says, how do I solve the problem? With the mashkon, you put in the mikveh without a bracha, or you take with the kli that's chayav, and you put him, make the bracha on the kli that's chayav, and you put them in together. Then he says, what about if I give a utensil to an uman to fix? I give my keli to an uman to do work on it, and then he returns to me. Now, we have a machlokas about how an uman gets played, but the question is an uman kone b'shevach ha-kli? Does an uman take possession? How does an uman get paid? Does he get paid because he's a poel, he works there, and he's a sechir in some sense? Or does he get paid because he is, his work, he owns? Whatever benefit or improvement that he put into the kli, he owns, and then he sells you that improvement. Well, if that's the case, then the goy who did the improvement in the kli, he owns a part of that kli now. And now you're buying it back from him. So when you buy it back from the Ovi Chavim, you have to put it in the mikveh. That's what Tosfos asks over here. It says, Ein tzarech tevila, kevin de ein shmo alav. His name is not called on it over here. The lo havi kemaseh shaya. In Midian, the whole idea is that they were owned by the Midianim, and now they're owned by the Israelim. Before they were called Klei Midian, now they're called Klei Israel. But a Klei Israel, Biyad, Uman, is still called the Klei Israel. It's still his Keli, just the Uman's working on it. So over there, it would not require a dip in the mikveh when he gives it back to you. So because it's, but on the other hand, if someone is mocher, a Klei to Novi Chachavim, and then bought it back from him, then it wouldn't be tevila, even though it was never used in between. If you sold it to him and bought it back without it ever being used, you'd have to put it in the mikveh, because there it also says that change in name and ownership over it creates that problem. Now, if you are a mashkein, what about if you give collateral to a goy? You give your keli as a collateral to a goy, when you get it back, do you have to be matbil that keli? So Tosfos says that you don't need tevila in that case. Even though we have a suffix, and by the case where we have it as collateral, we put it in the mikveh, when you give it over, even that suffix, no. When it comes from the Jew giving over collateral, there's clearly not like zvine. It's only a question in this direction, which is interesting. Tosfos makes such a distinction that in receipt of collateral, the Gemara has a suffix about whether it's zvine or not. But in the giving of collateral, he says it's not even a question that it's not considered a zvine.
When you get it back.
Yeah, when you get back, you don't have to put in the mikveh. Yes, and Tosfos says no, which is very interesting. He says it's not. He differentiates between the two. I don't know if he's differentiating between because of the, if it's a Jew goy issue. I mean, that when the goy gives it to the Jew versus the Jew giving it to the goy, there's a different status in the mashkon because of the way the kinyanim work. I don't know if that's what Tosfos is differentiating, or Tosfos is making a fundamental differentiation somehow here that when in the acceptance of a collateral versus the giving of the collateral.
Is there anything to say tonight you're about to use that stuff?
No, he used to put them out on the table. That was the Mariel. Used to take out all the beautiful kelim that were mashkon and put them on the table. He didn't
use them.
No, he used them. He just put them out that they would look nice. Yeah.
So just to use them, there's no question of tefillah then.
No, because it's clay suda. You have to use it for clay suda. I mean, just because you buy a kli that's a decorative kli, you don't have to take it to the mikveh.
Right.
It has to be something that has utility.
Oh, it
has
to be used at all.
He didn't use them. He just took them out on there to make it beautiful. The table looked like he was a ben chorin. He was wealthy. Right. That was what he did. It was interesting minhag that he had. Hey, Tana Rabbanan. Alukea kli tashmish min olu chamim. So here we have a brayta that basically lays out the halachas here. If you buy something from the goy, dvarim shalom nishtamish v'hen, if he never used them, matbilan v'hen torin, put them in the mikveh and you're ready to go. Dvarim shalom nishtamish v'hen, on the other hand, things that were used, ayudet sonein, but they were used in the cold water, kagon, examples, kosot, cups, kaitoniot, jugs or pitchers, and slofiot or flasks, medichan, then you have to rinse them out, umatbilan, and put them in the mikveh and torin. On the other hand, dvarim shalom nishtamish v'hen, ayudet chamin, they were used with hot water, kagon, yorot, which are like cauldrons or large vats, and kumusim, which are either kettles or urns, umechame chamin, or things that are used to heat up water, magilan, then you have to put them into boiling water, you have to put them into a cauldron of boiling water, umat bilan, then you put them in the mikveh into a rim. The rim, shenishabayim ayidei or, they're used in the fire kagon, examples, are shibudim, is a spit skewer, as kalaot, which are the grills, milabdan, then you have to fire them up, umat bilan, and then put them in the mikveh into a rim, then they're tor. Vikulan, shenishtamesh behem, actually yadvil, anything that is used in them before, actually yadvil, before they are put in the mikveh, b'shelo yagil, b'shelo yilabain, before they were kashered, if you use the keli before it went to the mikveh, or before it was kashered, then tani chado asur, one braita says asur, v'tani yidoch mutar, the other braita says mutar, lo kasho, hanka namar no teitan lefkam asur, hanka mandamar no teitan lefkam mutar, that has to do with the no teitan. If you think no teitan lefkam is mutar, then, even if you didn't take them to the mikveh, even if you didn't kasher them, if you use them, they still mutar, because you didn't use them, but yisur, there's no problem here. On the other hand, if you think that no tetam lefgam is asur, then you have a problem, because you used them before the point in time that they were kashered. Well, the man damar no tetam lefgam mutar, the one who says no tetam lefgam, gilui ov dechamim da'asar rachman ha'ichim ishkachata. What's the case of gilui ov dechamim? Why do you ever have to kasher a kli? If after 24 hours, everything is no tetam lefgam, then why do you have to kasher anything? Everything's kosher after 24 hours. Says Amar Rav Chiya b'Rav Ravuna, lo asur Torah l'kdeira bat yoma. That's very right. That's exactly what it is. Only something within that was used within the last 24 hours, according to Rashi, is kvar fig bat tamo b'linat laila. If it's left overnight, it already loses its tam. Right? You can see there's a large tosus on this. We'll deal with that tomorrow. But overnight, rather than 24 hours. Bat yoma sounds like it's a 24-hour period before it loses it. Rashi just says here, if it stays overnight, it's already lost its flavor, which doesn't sound like a full 24-hour period that he's asking for. Right. As opposed to made late. Then it's a very poor game. Ah, that's the case. Something that's lav no tein tam lifkam, and therefore requires kashering. Mikam elich lishtarech. So the Gemara says, okay. So after 24 hours, all I have to do is buy a keli, let it sit for 24 hours, and then I won't have to take it to the mikveh. I won't have to kasher. It'll be fine. Gezera, gedera she'en abat yoma, mishum gedera bat yoma. It's a gzera, something that's over 24 hours or something that's within 24 hours. We don't let you use a kli after 24 hours, because you might come to use a kli within 24 hours. We don't let you not take it to the mikveh just by waiting 24 hours, because we're afraid you'll use a kli within 24 hours without taking it to the mikveh, and that's enichanami. That's why we have separate dishes for milchiks and fleishiks. Technically, you would not have to have separate milchiks and fleishik dishes, you just have to wait 24 hours. It should ain't been your mom, and you would be fine. You could use either one. But we're denu, we're makbid, that we ain't b'nei yoman for b'nei yoman. And so we don't do that at all. We don't use an any b'nei yoman, even though technically it should be just fine. B'idach teira, what about the other party? What does he do about this? If he says, no tentam lifgam is always a sur, what does he say? K'dera bat yoman, nami mifgam v'gamo. That he says, and we saw this earlier in the Masecht already, that even a kli in its early stages, the flavor is always deteriorating. There's always some gum in the flavor, and that gum in the flavor causes some deleterious effect on the other thing that it's touching. And since there's always some deterioration in the flavor, and it has that effect on other things, that means that a kli midyan, whether it was in the 24 hours out or 24 hours, they already know tentam lifgam. So the tentam lifgam sounds like it's asur, according to that opinion. So he doesn't differentiate between bat yoma and eno bat yoma, because everything is no tetam lefgam, and everything is asur. As opposed to the other opinion, who says no tetam lefgam is mutar after 24 hours, so that's no tetam lefgam. Within 24 hours, there's no tetam leshevach, and therefore it's a problem, and you would have to kasher within the 24 hours. So that's the difference in their opinions. It's two things that are interesting. One, in the Magilan, Tosfos says, the Tosfos Magilan, lav davka magil v'achakar yatbil. You don't have to do it in that order. You don't have to kasher it, and then take it to the mikveh. Ela filu matbil bereisha. Even if you take it to the mikveh first, it's fine. Tach tefila ina bishvil tumah. The tefila is not bishvil tumah. Telavi ketovel b'sheretz biyado. That's not the problem. Da filu chadashim tzrichim tefila. Because you see, even new kelim require tefila. So it has nothing to do with what's absorbed or whether it's kosher or not. So v'tana nami sakin shipa v'hitara. Afagam telo tara legamre. Shrei tzricha giul lachtoch roteach. In order to cut hot things, you would need giul. V'afilu achi matbil lachtoch batzone. They wanted to do that because of the Isur, they wanted to get rid of the Isur faster. I mean, the one thing you want to do first is kasher it, because that's the Isur. Now you can see somebody arguing with Tosfos, especially by Libun. Tosfos says it's by Hagalah, but by Libun maybe doesn't say that, because Libun makes it into a new kli. So if Libun makes into new Kli, if you did it before the Libun, the Tvila, that may not help you. Because after Libun, you have to take it again for the Mikveh. That was our proof that Kelim Chadashim need Mikveh. So Tosfos only says this by Hagala. I don't know if he would agree with it by Libun. By Libun, it sounds like you would have to have the Mikveh after the Libun. By Hagala, it's not a new Kli. There, you might have it before. You could see someone arguing on Tosfos and saying, no, you have to make it. In order to make it a Kli Yisrael, as if your shame on it, plus it has to be kosher, that it has utility, that you can use it. So once it has utility, then you have to put in the mikveh. If you can't use it for a suda, because it's not kashid yet, you wouldn't be able to put in the mikveh. So you could see why people would argue on Tosa's position over here. The next Tosa is also interesting. Kulam shnish mehem, the man tani mutar, nakat shapir, achlo yadbil. When it says mutar, it says until you put in the mikveh, it's mutar. Of a man tani asur, in la sur, yim nishta meshmo kodim tvila. It's not usur if you use it before tvila. Miu, ikal meimar, the gozu atu kodim hagal of libun. So when hagal libun, I understand why you wouldn't use it until you take care of the issue. But by tefillah, even if he used it beforehand, he says, "In isur, even the shemesh will call him tefillah, shouldn't make it asur just because he used it before the tefillah." The last thing to discuss here is actually the language that's used in the Braita. The Braita said, "Chulan shnishtash mehen ad shlo yadbil v'shlo yagil v'shlo yilabein." So shlo yagil shlo yilabein makes sense, but shlo yadbil, what's the problem? If he used them before they had tefillah, why does that have any impact in terms of the kashrut to the food that's found inside? So Tosfos discusses it, the Rambam, the Raivud, many of the Rishonim discuss it. So there's a group of Rishonim that believe that the matbil over here means hadacha, means to rinse it out or cleanse it out. I mean, those are the three different methodologies that were mentioned before in the Braita for kashering kelim. And so ad shelo yadbil shelo yagil shelo yabein follows that. It's ad shelo yadiach, ad shelo yagil shelo yabein. That the matbil here is used interchangeably with the word hadacha. Although we don't find that anywhere else in Shas, that the word tevilah is very separate from hadacha. Nevertheless, there are Rishonim that learn that way in order to get over the problem. There are other Rishonim who believe that the answer of the Gemara that talked about Noten Tam Lifkam and Noten Tam Lishevach, the machloket that we bring afterwards to explain the two opinions, one Leisur and one the Het there, is really only going back on the last two items there, on Shlo Yagil and Shlo Yabein, but not Ad Shlo Yadbil, part of the Braita. So that's another possible answer over here. And then Tosfos gives one other answer is Miikal Meimar, the Gozer Atu Kodem Hagala of Libun. That when it comes to Lifnei Tevilah, they were Gozer Atu Kodem Hagala of Libun. That it's a Gzera Atu, but not that inherently there is a problem here. Okay, we'll stop over here.